It was a really nice movie. The first question that I have is, when was the first time that you thought that I can be in better service in somewhere else than in Sweden?
That was actually way back in 1976, 1977. We married in 1976. And the year after, we went to visit the family in Ethiopia. And by incident, just you slipped like a banana, what do you call it? I just slipped in. And they asked me, why don't you help? We have a hospital who needs a doctor. And I just said, yes, of course. When, so without thinking, I just volunteered. And then I was sitting far away, so she couldn't kick me on the leg. So that was how we started. That was my first assignment in northern part of Ethiopia, 1978 to 1980, in a hospital, the same setup like Ira.
And how long was it?
Then at that time, that was 2 years. We could have continued the government to go to the hospital. And first, we volunteered to stay with the government. We were sent by the mission, so it was a mission hospital. So I said, well, the patients are the same, so we could, we volunteered to stay with the government. But after a short while, I realized that you cannot work with the Ethiopian government. That was too difficult. So we went back to Sweden, and then we have been back and forth to Ethiopia and even other countries.
In the movie, you said that the Ethiopian people are very stoic and pragmatic. Did it change you also? You are used in Sweden to use all the high-tech machines and keep the patients alive as long as you want, almost. And in Ethiopia, you have really scarce work environment.
When you live among the Romans, you have to do like Romans. I mean, it's like two different worlds. Sometimes you cannot even believe that you're on the same planet because the worlds are so different. But I mean, the subjective suffering, you cannot question. So a Swedish patient is suffering from an ingrowing toenail as much as a guy with a spear in his stomach. I mean, you cannot... you just have to adjust to the situation.
But do you think that in Western countries we are so used to this kind of medicine that we grow weak ourselves?
This is a difficult question. It's a little bit philosophical. But I think that pain is not just evil. I mean... We do vaccinate our children against diseases. We vaccinate them, we give them a small dose so they get resistance. Maybe pain, a little pain is good. You learn how to
get strong.
To go through life with a little resistance. I mean, now in Sweden, people are packed in cotton the whole way from birth to the grave. You should not be exposed to anything hardship. It should be just like, you know, no resistance all the way. And I think maybe that's wrong. Maybe we need a little resistance to grow strong and appreciate life.
But you mean in Sweden? The government, if you have problem, the government come and help you. But in Ethiopia, you have to do it yourself. You have no one who can help you. So you have to do it yourself.
But you're both from Sweden also. How long was it? Didn't you adjust yourself to this kind of environment? Like you said, you have to be a general surgeon, not orthopedic surgeon anymore. You saw a lot of... really bad stuff there. How you kept yourself sane and feeling like I want to do it again? Because a lot of surgeons that go to like Africa or Asia to help in poorer countries, they come back and say, no, I don't want to go there anymore because it wore them out so much. it's emotionally and physically so hard.
Really? Oh, maybe there's something wrong with me. But no, really, I for the first moment I put my foot on the Ethiopian soil, I felt that this is where I belong. I felt at home immediately. People are friendly, and it's a relaxed atmosphere. You have possibilities of using your creative mind in the traffic, in surgery, wherever. The people are very flexible and open for new inventions. So no, I couldn't say.
And as you said, the people are more thankful for everything you do.
Yeah, really. The people, even, I mean, I had. I don't show all the complications I had, and I don't show when I was not successful. We didn't show that in the movie. But sometimes I really had. I couldn't help people, and even if something went terrible wrong, people, they had not come so far in Ethiopia. They still believed that a doctor is always trying to do the best for the patient. They still believe that. Not like in Sweden. If something goes wrong, someone has to be blamed. So the feedback you got keeps you, I mean, it gives you strength and strength so you can continue. At least that worked for me.
Yeah, it was seen in the movie also when you had like some bad news to deliver. Then you pushed yourself overthinking about it and pushed yourself forward and say, okay, I can do it. I can do it right now. Let's see another patient. But when you are coming back to Sweden, how much was it different for you to like hours and hours on end?
As I said, it was like coming back to another planet. The cultural shock when you return is far worse than when you go out. I remember the very first time I came home from Ethiopia. We had been there for some years, and I came back. And my first patient I had was a lady, a young lady, who had given birth to a child. And simply, that was a cultural crash. Because I simply didn't understand what her problem was, but it was that she got this stria. You know, when you deliver, your body is not like it was before. So maybe she looked like a model, but she got some, we call it stria, some skin. I was trying to get her. So she went out from the room and she was swearing and cursing this stupid doctor. But I simply didn't understand the problem. So, but you have to adjust. Again, it's like if you want to work in Sweden, you have to adjust to Sweden, to the situation there. So, but as you also saw in the movie, when I came back after 10 years in Aira, I did 1 year, but I was not happy. I didn't feel at home. I got a very high salary, but I didn't. My day was filled with just nothing. I didn't do anything. I'm not exaggerating if I say that I did less surgery in 1 year than I did in 1 week in Aira. So, and as a surgeon, I mean, you become a surgeon because you like to do surgery. Why do you become a concert pianist? Because you love to play the piano. And I don't think a concert pianist appreciates using 80% of the time by doing computer work and documenting, and then only doing 10 or 20% performance. So it's the same with surgery, and I didn't feel happy. So I left after 1 year, as you saw. So I started a new career as a jazz musician. You can come and listen on Saturday. I'm giving a performance in Pärnu. I have a group from Sweden coming, so we will give a small performance. In music now, I find all what I miss in surgery, in health work in Sweden today. I get... there is opportunity to use your creativity. No one tells you that this note is wrong and you shouldn't do that and you have to document. Whenever you do a concert, you have first to document, and then afterwards you have to put diagnosis on all the things, and you have to. And I mean, for surgeons in Sweden today, they use often more time after the surgery in front of the computer to put different diagnoses and codes and numbers and things like that. More time than the surgery itself, and then I think then something is wrong.
When you were in Ethiopia, how did you manage the tensions in the war? I think that in the movie everything was fine and really always giggling and making jokes, but how was it really? Because like so much patients in a day, it must have some kind of tensions in the operating room.
Yeah, I used to try to help him. Or to keep the patients away from him and tell the other staff to keep the patients away so he didn't get mad. And, you know, so we...
Our daughter is studying medicine. She was studying in Hungary. And at one time she was fed up. So she needed a break. And she came and stayed with us in Iran. She was with me in the hospital. And then she said, Daddy, you are so patient in the OR theater. You are so patient and you are not shouting. And why can you not be like that at home? So I think that was a good, good. But what I have learned, not only from me, from experience, that if you start to shout at people, I mean, people that do mistakes or they are nervous or they are insecure, if you start to shout at them, it just becomes worse. So I tried always to keep a happy atmosphere in the OR and to encourage them instead of shouting and really, yeah. Mostly. So I, of course, once and a few times I really erupted, but usually not in the OR. That was more with the administration. But... once in a year or something.
Okay, last question from me, then we can take questions from the audience. How was the penis clamp?
Not bad. I mean, if you you can try it yourself. If you are leaking, I mean, this is a common complication when you do this open surgery, which we did in Ethiopia. So usually it's only temporary leakage, but instead of going and leaking, it's far more convenient to have this penis clamp. And you can buy them in Sweden, and the cost is it's expensive. So this was a cheap solution. What you need to remember to do is to remove the decorations, because they didn't like the decorations. No, they wanted, you know, the metal.
Thank you for the tips.
Metal.
What? On küsimusi.
I wanted to ask why you decided to come or go back to Sweden. Like, if you really enjoyed it in Ethiopia, then why did you at the end decide to go back to Sweden?
Someone decided instead of me. The Swedish mission, which was responsible for us, who sent us, they said that now you are 67 years old. That means you have to retire. We cannot take responsibility for you anymore. So even if I wanted to stay, I couldn't stay with them. And you cannot just be there without any organization behind you. So that was why I was forced into retirement.
But didn't you want to spend your retirement in Ethiopia? Just like not working, but like just staying there?
Yeah, but you know, now we have... we have grandchildren, and my wife, she was longing back home and to be near the grandchildren. And also, what the film doesn't show, our most important work in Ida was not all this surgery and things. The most important accomplishment was that we trained a lot of staff. When we came, there was only five nurses, nurses in the hospital. The rest had no medical training. There was no anesthetic nurse, no midwife, no X-ray technicians. So we started from the very beginning, from the first day, we started to train nurses and even the doctors. We had doctors now and then, they came and went, but no doctors with specialty. So we also helped doctors to get their specialty. So when I left, we had one Dr. Tariku, general surgeon, an eye surgeon, an orthopedic surgeon, a cardiologist, an internist, and a gynecologist. So somehow our mission was accomplished. We were not needed anymore. So, and I think that this started like a typical mission hospital with white people, doctors, nurses, and they were sitting on the administration. It started like that. And then gradually they handled over. So then there was they had still some missionaries there, but we were, Senaid and I, we were the last white people in that hospital. And then we somehow left it to Ethiopians. And this is what I think is, in Ethiopian hospitals, there should be Ethiopian doctors and Ethiopian nurses, not no white people in the end. But so that is the reason why we went back. And it felt like a chapter, closed chapter, because I could have stayed, but then, I mean, someday you need to leave your children. They want to be on their own. And it's the same with the doctors. I think you have to let them, even if I felt that I could do it much better, then let them do it.
You have these two systems to compare. How do you see the future of the Western medicine? Is there any chance to change it?
Well, I don't know how to change it. The problem is that the main problem with the system in the Western healthcare is that the administration have taken the power from the medical profession. And the medical profession have let the power slip out of their hands. So now it is the bureaucrats and administrators with no medical experience who are running the whole business. And I think that is the main problem. And that will never change as long as they have the power in their hands, and they will never give it away. So that's the problem, I think. So we need some kind of revolution.
Yeah. Why did you make this documentary? Why are you here?
I didn't make a documentary. The story is that I was there, I was busy, I was working hard. I got a lot of more or less strange requests. I got a letter, I'm a medical student, first year. I would like to come and help in your hospital. I understand if I cannot get salary, but if I get pocket money and free housing and food, I will come and help you. And I thought, a first year medical student, what can he or she offer? And I got many other requests from here and there. We would like to come and help in the hospital. We are a group of 10 church people. We would like to help if you need a new roof, or we can paint the walls. We are teachers, and we can also teach yoga, and we can teach massage. And I told them, well, just the tickets for the flight. For that money, we could pay hundreds of local craftsmen to do the work, and they were much better than them. So I also got this request from a filmmaker, said, I want to come and make a documentary. And I immediately said, no, no, thank you. But then my daughter, she heard about it, and she said, well, Daddy, you are crazy, so it could be a funny movie. And then, no. And then she knew how to. She said, for the sake of your grandchildren, so your grandchildren. I said, okay. So I said, let him come. And then he came and he started to shoot this Gandini. He had a cameraman and a microphone. And they started to shoot. And then she sent a message, an urgent message, and said, Daddy, Daddy, watch out. He was the one who nailed Berlusconi. So she warned me, but then it was too late. So it was not me who asked somebody to come and do a documentary. He asked to come and do it. And why, I don't know. But I never thought that it would make such a big... I thought it would just be shown in the television in Sweden and then forgotten. But people are obviously interested in it, so I get many requests in Sweden to come and make a talk. So that's the story about the documentary. Mm. Did I answer your question? Or?
So you said to be a good surgeon, you need like good nurse, good assistant, and good anesthesiologist. How did you find them? How did you choose them? And how did you educate them in the beginning? Probably when you arrived there first time, it was difficult to find them.
Once again, a little bit slow. Did you get it? I didn't get it. Well, as I said, there were five nurses in the hospital when I came. One nurse was in the operating theater. He gave anesthesia with old equipment for ITER, which he never got any training in anesthesia. So he had learned by experience. So I worked with him. And as I said, from the very first day, we raised money from private funds. So we took this auxiliaries, the helpers in the operating theater. We sent them two by two to get trained as nurses. And the anesthetist, the nurse who gave anesthesia, we had him train another nurse to transfer his skill, which he has learned himself. And then we sent him for training. And during that period, the other one took over and did the anesthesia with the old equipment. Then when the nurse came back, actually he came after half year and just to greet us. And then he said to me, Dr. Erik, I didn't know it was so dangerous what we were doing. So he was good, he got the training. And then after 3 or 4 years, I think 3 or 4 years, he came back and then he was fully, full licensed anesthetic nurse, very clever. He was in the university clinic in Addis Ababa, and they had to give anesthesia to newborn babies. And nobody wanted to do it because it was dangerous. And he volunteered. So when he learned, he was an expert in giving anesthesia, even to newborn babies. Then I tried to raise money for a new equipment. And then I bought new equipment. So this was the way we worked all the time, from scratch and then up to the standard which we have today. We have now 4 trained anesthetic nurses. All done by private money, private donations. So I didn't have any clever anesthetic nurse or any clever nurses from the start. So we had to train them ourselves.
Do you still keep contact with the Ethiopian hospital or with the people that you work with? Do they still call you and ask some questions?
Yeah, especially the first period, but now they are more or less they are running the hospital by themselves. But we are still in contact with them, and now we are expecting the orthopedic surgeon, a young orthopedic doctor whom we have supported in being trained as an orthopedic surgeon, and I have somehow promised that I could go back and train him in spinal surgery and special procedures which I don't learn in Ethiopia. So that might be a future project. But we have still contact with him. I just got an email now. Yeah.
Visitors who come in August. We have some friends from the hospital coming in August to us in Sweden. So.
Yeah. Thank you for this nice movie. And as you yourself told, that in the movie we don't see any unsuccessful stories, and that in a way gives this really nice uplifting mood to the movie. But it still makes you wonder what was the percentage, or what was the like the how many of your work, what was the compared to successful cases compared to unsuccessful stories? Just
we didn't have any complications. Of course, we had thinking of the patient came late. I mean, it's not like in Sweden. If you have pain for half an hour, you go to the hospital. And the doctor doesn't know, is this really, could it be the start of an appendicitis, or is it just nothing? So that is the difficulties in Sweden. In Ethiopia, they stayed at home too long. So when they came, they had advanced peritonitis and they were half dead. So of course, we could not save all, but I think it's amazing how many survived. We had one complication, which you don't see in your setup here. At complicated deliveries, when there is a mechanical obstruction, so the baby is too big or the pelvic is too small, the baby cannot come out, and the uterus tries to squeeze it and squeeze it and squeeze it. And after 1-2 days, it bursts the uterus. So the baby is born inside the abdomen among all the intestines. And this is a very unusual complications here in the Western world, but there it was not uncommon. Most of the women, they died, but some of them, they managed to reach the hospital. And often they had no blood pressure, they had no pulse, they were only breathing when they arrived, so they were dying. And we had a doctor from outside who came to the hospital, and he made a follow-up of these patients, and 97% survived. 97. And that is an amazing result when you think that they were half dead when, or more than half dead when they came. So that was one example. Then I don't have any statistics from others, but I don't think that we had more complications than in the setup here back home. One thing we had less infections after surgery than I had in Sweden, or I saw in Sweden. I was shocked when I saw at the orthopedic clinic how many patients had post-operative infections. And if we got infections in Ethiopia, it was the old-fashioned way. You saw that it became red and swollen, and then the pus came out, and then it healed. But when they got infection in Sweden in the orthopedic clinic, it came like a thief in the night, slowly and small fever, and it was with bacteria which were multi-resistant. So it meant that the patient was infected for the rest of their life. Nothing could nothing could cure them. So that is the difference between Ethiopia and Sweden, I think.
Why is that?
Because in Sweden and many Western countries, we have used a lot of money and energy and time to culture multi-resistant bacteria. In Ethiopia, we have not reached that far, so the bacterial environment is good-natured. The bacteria we had in the OR, there were no resistance, they were good-natured. So when I did an orthopedic procedure, I gave one shot of antibiotic and I killed all the bacteria, so I didn't get any infections. That is the reason. It's not like I have magic hands, but it's not because of that. And it's not because the patient were more resistant, that Africans are more resistant. It's not at all. It's the bacterial environment. And when I came back and I saw the problem in Swedish hospitals, I wrote a letter to the health authority in Sweden that I have a very simple and cheap solution to the problem. You should take cow dung, fresh cow dung, and spread in the operating theaters in the hospitals in Sweden, so you will get a good bacterial environment. But they didn't listen.
My question is related to the previous question, why are you here? And this is actually to both of you. You describe Swedish healthcare system that is really similar to Estonian one. And some physician may say that you compromised modern medicine to those procedures you did there. Do you see your mission here is to present your movie, or do you see your mission to call young doctors to rediscover art of the medicine, or are you open to the offers to be a lecturer in a conference, for example?
I would love. So the last option is more what I hope and I am hoping for, that maybe they can reinvent the wheel. I think we have, because what they are doing now, I see in Sweden, what they are doing is they are trying to solve the problem with multi-resistance. They develop more potent antibiotics, and then the bacteria get more resistant, and then again they try to make more potent antibiotics. Maybe you should take a step back and start to think, maybe we are doing the wrong way. Maybe we should start to think in another direction. Or? I don't have the solution. The cow dung, it was just a joke. I didn't write them.
I meant more your comments about an administrative work or the paperwork. Do we need more this kind of experience for the young doctors to rediscover the basics of the medicine?
I don't know how. I mean, again, it's because the bureaucrats had taken over, and they're the one who. They believe that the more documentation and the more bureaucracy, the better and the safer healthcare you give. And it's absolutely wrong. But how to change their minds, I don't know. But maybe younger doctors, if they can make some kind of revolution or something. I had a sad experience when I was working in orthopedic clinic in Sweden. There was a young doctor, she just finished medical school, and we were sitting in the coffee room, and she said that, I studied medicine because I didn't want to be someone working in an office with paper. And now I have discovered that this is exactly what I'm doing. And I felt so sad. She was very, very clever and very talented and very engaged. And she discovered that she had become a functionary sitting in front of the computer. And really, when you use, it's not just figures which comes in my mind, but there is a book in Sweden made by two scientists, and they followed the development for 2 decades in Sweden. And in their documentation, there are examples of medical facilities who uses 14% of the working time for the patients related procedures and 86% for documentation and meetings and administrative work. I mean, it's devastating. The Swedish doctors are seeing least patients in the whole Europe. I think even here you are better off than in Sweden, but I think you are heading the same way, unfortunately. The main problem is in that the Swedish industry was growing and doing very, very well. And then the politicians, they thought, if they're doing so well, we will take the same structures and put let the health care being led by the same new management systems. And I think that was where it all went wrong, because hospitals, they're not like factories. It's not like car factories. We only have expenses. We don't have income. And we are not interested to sell products to the... Actually, we would, as a surgeon now, as a doctor, you would be more than happy if your patient, you don't have so many patients, because that means the population is healthy. So that makes us happy. So we are not like businessmen. So that is where I think it went all wrong.
I have a question to Senat. You went back to Sweden and started working as a nurse again. What is your experience between the two countries?
You know, as Eric said before, it's big different. It's you cannot compare these two countries. But, as a nurse, it's the same thing I did in Ethiopia to help the patient as good as I could do. And it's the same I do in Sweden now. So for me, it was not so difficult to come back to Sweden.
In my early years in Ethiopia, I had a child with a pee in the right bronchus. He had inhalated a pee, and it was blocking, so the lung was collapsed. And I was trying desperately. I was new. I was trying to call the university clinic in Addis Ababa, 600 kilometers away. I couldn't get the telephone working. I tried. I didn't know what to do. I needed a bronchoscope for a child. Later I realized there was no child pediatric bronchoscope for children in whole Ethiopia. So, but I was new. And while I was waiting for the line to work to Addis Ababa, I was thinking out another plan how to do it. So I was really working hard. And then I had other patients. So when I went to see the child, the parents had taken him home. And they said, "We have seen the doctor. He's doing his best, but he cannot help, so we better take the child home and we will not disturb him." That is the Ethiopian way. Then I came to Sweden and I was in the emergency room, and then the man came in and he said, "You, are you the one who saved the life of my son yesterday?" "Yes, yes." "Where is his cap?" So that is the difference, somehow.
Veel küsimusi?
I have one question about the most interesting challenges you had, or something that you would never expect to see in medical or in your operations or any injuries? Yeah, well, the spear one was in Ethiopia, wouldn't happen in Sweden, but anything more? Just so curious about that.
As you saw the blood, the
The animals who sucks.
There are so many
blood.
Things. I mean, they came so late, so the pathology was so advanced, so you couldn't believe it. Worms in the wounds you don't see often in Sweden. They didn't. He was the documentary filmer. He was 1 week in the hospital, and I was working for 10 years. So you only saw a small fraction. I have children with tumors of the eye, retinoblastoma, which was, the tumor was almost bigger than the head of the child. So they could not breathe and eat. I had tumors. I did many surgeries of bone tumors of the maxilla and mandibula, huge ones. But I even had so big ones, so I didn't dare. I couldn't do it, simply. So, but the most, the worst, I don't know. We had many interesting things. Bowel obstruction, you know, when you open it, it's worms who are blocking. That is some delicate things also you don't see in Sweden. Elephantiasis. I really can't say one thing, but.
Just a personal question. You said that you found a new career as a trumpet player, but do you still miss your job as a surgeon?
Yeah. I dream. In the nights, I dream that I'm doing surgery, and it ends with the most awful complications. It's awful. And I think it's all, it comes back. But of course, I miss it, but I cannot work in the healthcare in Scandinavia. It's not for me.
I was wondering, you said that if you practiced medicine the way you do in Ethiopia, in Sweden, then your license, doctor's license, would be taken away. Have you had any negative reactions to the movie?
Very few. Actually, very few. You don't know the story about this, but this filmer, Eric Andini, he came to shoot sequences from Ethiopia, to use in a documentary he had in his mind. It ended up in a movie called The Swedish Theory of Love. So he came to take some shots in Ethiopia, in the hospital, to use in that movie, another documentary. But then when the Swedish television, they saw what he had been shooting, they said, you have to go back and do a documentary about this couple. So then he came back, and then he shot for 1 week, and it becomes this movie. And when the first documentary was shown, there were quite many, not many, but there were quite some negative comments, like this surgeon, Dr. Eric, he is like a neo-colonialist and almost like a racist, almost a little bit, you know. And what was he doing there? And there were some sour comments. So I prepared Senait, my wife, I prepared her. Now when they are showing this rebel surgeon, you have to be prepared that there might be many negative comments. But there were no one, just positive. So I said, something wrong. But then one day she said, Eric, look. And there was a comment in a Danish newspaper. I'm Danish. So it was in a Danish newspaper where they have shown the movie. There was a sour comment saying, like, he is only a hero because all Ethiopian doctors are abroad. They are in United States and Europe. That's what makes him a hero. And these methods he has. You know Donald Duck? Donald Duck? There is one inventor, he's called Uppfinnarjocke in Swedish. He's doing inventions. I don't know what his name is here. And he said, that kind of Donald Duck methods, I would really not like to be treated by that. And the one who wrote the comment, that was my brother. My older brother. So he didn't take the telephone and said, hi, Eric, I saw your movie, I didn't like it. He wrote the comment in there. So, and what people, of course, this, you again, he shows one week of my 10 years commitment in AERA. But just as with the training of the staff from the very beginning, I tried to, we started with repairing the equipment which was there, and then we tried to get new equipment. And the hospital which we left is not at all like you see here. We had modern X-ray, modern anesthetic equipment, modern laboratory. We had the first hospital in Ethiopia to get digitalized X-ray. But that is not shown in the movie because that is not interesting for people to see. It's more interesting with this. But that we still use, yeah, the drill. But otherwise, I had modern. I didn't need to use so much bicycle spokes as before. But we got more really modern orthopedic equipment also.
I would really thank you for that great movie. It put a smile on my face, and I think it's really brave what you did, and I believe good things that you did will come back to your life. At some point, I feel your pain, because I'm a dermatologist. As a doctor, I really want to see some really, really ugly rashes, and people come and say, you know, I have a pimple here, you can see actually, but it was here yesterday, and I feel really disappointed, because I see, like, really little of real problem, and a lot of people thinking they have problem. But I think that what we see in this movie, it's a bit more of veterinary and less of modern medicine, because if we, for even being a doctor, if for 1 second we think like we're a patient and you come to see a doctor and he says, that's a solution and point. You want to discuss, you want to see opportunities. So I think the problem of bureaucracy comes along with patients who are more educated, who want to participate, they want it to be 50-50. So I think it's really difficult to avoid it. We cannot any possible way to take that power and say, like, shut up, I'm a doctor, I decide here, and just agree with me, I'll go home and die. I think it comes with education and with higher society. Thank you.
I get your point. I get your point. It's true. But in Ethiopia, it was a different situation because the people, they had no education, so you could not somehow, you were not really on the same line. And again, I did surgery every day from 8:30 in the morning until 4 or 5 p.m. Then I went down, and then I saw patients which the other Ethiopian doctors have screened, or the nurses had screened. And then maybe I saw 30 to 50 patients in 20 minutes. And then most of the patients, they were on the operating table the next day. So, I mean, it was a very unusual way of working. It was not human. But again, when you come to back to the Western society, do you really need all this bureaucracy? I'm not sure. The bureaucracy also takes time, the time you need to sit and talk with the patient. So when I talked about the 14%, I mean 14% you use for patient-related procedures, that includes talking and discussing with the patient. 14% of the time, 86% you're sitting in front of the computer. So I think that the bureaucracy is even making it more difficult for us to communicate with the, and use your time with the patient.
Uh,
So you're orthopedic surgeon, but we saw in the movie that you have been doing surgeries of different profiles, like general surgery and gynecology and obstetrics, like C-section and uterus prolapses. How did you start doing them? Have you done them before going to Ethiopia? Like, what was your practice before that?
I was trained as a general surgeon in Sweden, and then I took another specialty, orthopedic surgery, and I worked also in a gynecological department. Of course, I didn't do all the procedures in Sweden before I went to Ethiopia, but I somehow had the basics. And then again, if you do a lot of surgery, you can just as when you are using your cookbook at home, when you are in the kitchen, you use your cookbook, you look, and then you do it. And that was the way I did it. I looked in the book, and then I did it.
But it's not really true, because I when I met Eric, this is many, he was studying the whole time. He was, studying in neurosurgery or in obstetric or in orthopedic. He was reading all these books, and I used to ask him, why do you read all this? Are you not going to be only orthopedic? But then he would say, you never know. It's good to know. So he was always studying. So he it's not that he was just, as he's saying, just to take a cookbook and read. It was not that easy. That's simple, I mean.
Yeah, also, when I was younger, a young doctor, we had a very hard taxation in Sweden. So even the marginal percentage of taxation could be more than 100%. There's a famous book written by Astrid Lindgren, the one with Pippi Longstrump, Pippi Longstrump? That author, she ended up paying 103% tax. So she wrote a book which is very famous in Sweden. It's called Pomperipossa. And she wrote about that problem. So as a doctor, you worked hard, you had overtime, and then you could take out the overtime in payment, but no one wanted, because you paid more than 100% tax. So they took out spare time, free time, and then they worked in the house, or they were lying at the beach or whatever. But instead, I went to other clinics. I went to a neurosurgical clinic and worked for free for 6 weeks or 3 months, and then in hand surgery and different kinds of specialties. Just I thought it was fun. It's a little bit the same with music. There is one problem. When I hear, neurosurgery, that sounds interesting. And then I start to read it. And it's the same now. I play trumpet. But then when I hear the saxophone, I say, that's a beautiful instrument. Then I go and buy a saxophone, and I start to play saxophone. And it's difficult for me to set limits. But that kind of surgeons, I don't think is there's no place for them anymore, not even in Africa in the future. In our hospital in Aira, we have already now orthopedic surgeon, general surgeon, gynecologist, so it's already split up in three. So I'm like a dinosaur, I think. We are dying out one by one.
Hi. I actually have a question about your own health. Like in Europe, all the medics protect themselves with special masks and glasses and everything, but we hardly saw you wear any mask, or how resilient your own organism were for all the African diseases.
That's true. I told the staff that they could wear protection for their own sake, to not be contaminated by the patient, but not the other way around, because that doesn't help. But the mouse piece, what do you call it, the mouse, which they used was made of clothes, and there were very few So there was some kind of fight Monday to find one, and then they got one and they put it on, and then they used it the whole day, and they were sneezing and there was blood and some coffee and food, and then they put it in the pocket and next morning they put it on again. So they had it for 1 week, and I thought that this is not good. So I told them, don't do that. I bought plastic shields which they could use. And I myself, I used it also, but it was so warm. So I didn't use, as you saw on the pictures, I didn't use mouse yet. And just when, just the filmer, he just commented before, you don't use this, where is that mouse? Yeah, you don't use it. And then I came with a long explanation that it can even be harmful for the patient to use it. So and I said, what if it splashes in your face? It never happens. And then it just happened. So
you were very healthy and
yeah,
yourself.
I only got sick when we had leave. When we had an organization which tried to help us with doctors to replace me for a short while. So they used to send one surgeon and one gynecologist as a couple to replace me so I could take some leave. And always when I went for leave, then I became sick. Then I got malaria or whatever, acute cholecystitis, and had to go to the hospital. But it was always when I was on leave for some reason. Yeah.
No, that's okay.
Any more questions?
How to get good bacteria?
Don't misuse antibiotics, I think. And they have not come that far in Ethiopia, so, and I hope I every day I preached for them, don't misuse antibiotic. You will end up like we did in Europe. But I hope they listen. But there was a tendency to solve any problem with antibiotics, and then they will end up the same as we.
Hello. The world knows another rebel surgeon, so-called, Henry Marsh, the British neurosurgeon, maybe you know him.
Yeah.
So, have you ever collaborated with him? And what do you think of his working attitude? Maybe you had some relationships or working experience. Can you describe how was it? Thanks.
I never met him, but I have read his books. And then I met Dr. Thomas. He had met Henry Marsh, so I know about him, but as I said, not personally, but I read his book. And I like his books, and I like his attitude. As I understand, he has also given up working in the United Kingdom as a work, partly because of the bureaucracy, which he describes in his book. And now he is working in the Third World, I think. So I completely agree. I think we are somehow has the same spirit. I would like to meet him. I'm writing a book just now in Swedish, and I'm translating it into Danish, my own mother tongue. And I'm planning to make it maybe even English. And I'm going to ask him to write the foreword, I think. Or? If you haven't read these books, you should do it. I think it's translated even to Estonian. Actually, I know it is translated into Estonian. Henry Marsh.
One more question. In the movie, you said that like the working environment you were in, the amount of interesting cases makes it a surgeon paradise, or that was your how you said. But then it makes you wonder why it's not flooded with this young doctor from doctors from Scandinavia or United Kingdom or United States. Or do you Or have you met young doctors who want to come or do such a work? Because I imagine that there are some kind of those people around, or not?
Not many. I mean, most of younger colleagues, or even elderly colleagues, they would like to come and work for 6 weeks, 3 weeks, and have a little fun, and they go back. Very, very few are willing to offer 10 years of their life, a commitment of long time. And I think going out 6 weeks and doing that doesn't help Ethiopia that much. It helps the person, even more the person itself. They will grow and they will have experience going back. But I think if you want to change and if you want to help, you have to plan far, far ahead. Development takes time, a lot of time. So I had a lot of requests, people who wanted to come and help me. But that meant that they would come, they would be there for 6 weeks, and they will try to do some surgery. They never tried at home. And I didn't like the idea. We had also ideas that Swedish young doctors should come and work in our hospital because they didn't have enough patients, they didn't get enough operating theater time. I even had young doctors themselves writing, I am being trained I'm in training as surgeon, but I never come to the OI, I don't get any operating cases. Can I not come and do surgery? And I didn't like the idea, so I didn't allow it because I didn't like the idea that people from young doctors from Sweden should come and train on Ethiopian patients and then go back. If they had said, I would like to come, I will commit 5 years of my time, then that would be another thing. Yes, it became while I was there. After when I came, the hospital took in 75% of the budget by income, mostly patients' fee. And that is an amazing result because in most other hospitals of the same character I worked in, we only reached like 50%. So 75% was a good result. The other 25% came from a Christian organization in Germany. They donated 25% of the budget. After 2 years in the hospital, I suddenly I unexpectedly got a letter saying, we are not going to send you more money because our policy is now not to support curative healthcare, that means hospital healthcare. We are going to support preventive healthcare with focus on women and children. Don't mind the men, they can know. Women and children, focus. And I wrote back, 80% of our patients are women or children. We are doing public healthcare, we did vaccination programs, we had under 5 clinics where we gave free treatment to children under 5 years. We had mother healthcare, antenatal clinics, and you mentioned it. And then I told also, surgery is preventive. Every cesarean section we do is preventive surgery. We prevent death and other fatalities. Yeah, so surgery can be, why do we operate hernias? It's not just for fun or, it prevents serious complication, even death. So hernia surgery is preventive surgery. Why do you operate varices? Because you prevent ulcer to come. So a lot of surgery is preventive surgery. But they didn't listen. So there you were in a hospital, suddenly you had 25% of the budget lost. The hospital management, they decided to lower the guard and said, we will make it like a health center. Maybe we will keep the deliveries and cesarean sections, but otherwise we will just make it like a health center. And I said, no, we have to work us out of this. So that was why I started really to produce a lot of surgery, because the surgical fees, that was the main income. And then I got an agreement with an American cleft lip organization. So I operated on their behalf, and they paid for every patient. I got the idea because I saw an advertisement in an American newspaper. It said, you can help a child with a cleft lip with surgery. It costs you only $300. And I saw $300. My God, that was a lot of money. So I wrote to them, I can do it for one-tenth of the price. I can do it for $30. So that was, I came in contact with them. And then they accepted me as a surgeon on their behalf. But they said, we'll pay you $300. So that I got from them. And then fistula surgery, the complication which after delivery when women get this, do you know fistula problem? No? If the head is pushing a long time on the bladder wall will die and there will be a hole into the vagina. So the urine is just dribbling 24 hours without any control. That is a very common problem in Ethiopia. And the only way to help is by surgery. It's sometimes very complicated surgery. So that we also did, and I got money from an American organization, fistula organization. They paid us to do the surgeries. And that money, it covers the 25% which the Christian organization took away from us. So the hospital is now self-supporting. And that is, I was very happy about that. So sometimes when you get difficulties, it can be a blessing. So this, that they took away 25% of the budget, actually became a blessing because now the hospital is independent of the political environment in the donor organizations' minds. Suddenly they want to support blindness and they will support this and then women and then children. So now the hospital is independent. Yeah.
Yep. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Erik, Seinat, Christian, and thank you, Pärnu Film Festival, who gave us this film. There are more documentaries next week. They are also for free and they come from Pärnu, so come back again and have a nice evening.
And I have also to say thank you. You were the best audience I ever had. Really. I mean, a lot of interesting questions. Thank you very much. And don't forget to vote.